know the source.
The source.
OneRadioNetwork.com. We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
Okay, we're having fun talking to an interesting lady. She's up in the Northwest up there near Seattle, Ingrid Nyman, and just has studied a whole bunch of things, as you can tell by listening to her. In her 45 years of doing this, we've been talking a lot about fluoride and pineal gland and stuff like that. I know, Ingrid, you have one book. I believe it's Cancer Salves, A Botanical Approach to Treatment. Did you hear the story about the fellow in Kentucky with the chickweed salve? Did you hear about that?
I think I read about it years ago. This is quite a few years ago, right?
No, this
right?
is just and last week. Last week.
Oh, no.
There's an Amish farmer, God love him. He was selling some salves that he did put on there that they were good for cancer and that. So, you know, the FDA doesn't like that thing. And so, yeah, they arrested him and took him to court, and they gave him 6 years in prison for selling a chickweed salve. You know, God love him.
Yeah,
it's sad. So your book, Cancer Salves, does this have to do with the classic one, the bloodroot salve? Is that one of the things you write about?
And it wasn't just bloodroot, but that's the main one.
Is there a lot of different salves for cancer?
Yeah, there are. The treatment goes back quite a few years. It's hundreds of years, maybe more than that.
Yeah.
And two things I want to say. One is that the persecution of people who had simple cures for cancer has been ongoing at least 350 years.
Long time.
It made me nauseous when I was researching the book to see how much greed and corruption there was, even going way back.
Uh-huh.
And I was very lucky. I was invited to a dinner party. It happened to be my birthday. And the people who had invited me didn't know that, but I was seated next to Jane Heimlich, the wife of Henry Heimlich, Heimlich Maneuver.
Right.
And Jane is no longer among us, unfortunately. She was a wonderful interviewer. She was someone who just asked a question and you opened your soul to her. It was amazing being with her. And she said, Ingrid, you know, nobody's going to believe you unless you put the history in. And she had written a book called What Your Doctor Won't Tell You. It was sold quite well. And she said that this is the most effective treatment for cancer that has ever been discovered.
The blood root, the black salve.
The only reason that we're not using it is that there's more money to be made in other treatments.
Sure. Is it just used for like skin cancer, anger, and stuff like that, or is it other kinds of cancer?
It's anything basically, but the more accessible the tumor, the easier it is to use.
I see.
I know doctors, veterinarians who are injecting it directly into tumors.
Really? Oh, so it has to touch the actual cancerous cells, Ingrid?
If you're using bloodroot, it has to make a contact with the cell because it creates a chemical reaction that produces a lot of heat. And it necrotizes the tumor that way. Yeah. It's a very painful process, and I've just in the last 2 months or so realized that when I wrote the book, I missed putting the emphasis on what would make it more bearable. I mean, I knew I had to make it more bearable for people who were on a do-it-yourself adventure, but I didn't know how to use the really ancient method, and I've since figured that out. It's so there will be a sequel to the book eventually, but
is the ancient method, Ingrid, was a great deal different than what's being done today?
Well, I think that this is like the shamans who lived in touch with nature, understood how to use the things they saw around them. And we approach the same trees and plants with the idea that we're going to take these back to Harvard and have them chemically analyzed, right? We don't sit there and say, well, let's see, this plant has a plant spirit, and I want to talk to the plant spirit a bit before I get on a first-name basis with the plant. And I love watching documentaries of shamans in the jungle. Like, how do they know what they know? Well, they talk to the tree.
Yeah, talk to them.
And the kahunas in Hawaii were the same way.
Talk to them.
Morna used to tell me that she would go to the forest, she'd explain the problem to all the plants and ask if anyone wanted to volunteer to help. My niece is having a baby, I want her to have an easy delivery. Is anyone here interested in helping? One plant said, oh, yeah, okay, I'll sacrifice some of my leaves for you.
That's right.
And, and then what do? We grab up everything in sight and we dry it and we put it in a jar. And, what happened to the energy? Because everything that happens is energetic as well.
Yep. Where were we talking about now before? Oh, the bloodroot. Yeah, this, it's interesting you say, I had no idea that the bloodroot thing has been used. 350 years, you say, Ingrid. There was a fellow that we've had on the show a few times, Greg Catton, and he spent some time in jail, too, for the whole Cansema, right, the Cansema bloodroot thing. So it must work if they keep trying to get these guys out. He's in Ecuador today, and he still sells it, but they gave him a hard time. Spent time in prison. So there are actually people are ingesting bloodroot as well, not just putting it on the skin.
Yeah, and I have a lot of opinions about that at this point. And a lot of people that are promoting something don't have a really thorough understanding of the whole field of herbal medicine. So they might have inherited a recipe from some, ancestor that had a cancer cure or something. And then they just think, well, that's the begin all and end all. So I'll use it for this, and I'll use it for that, and I'll use it for something else. If you're really an herbalist, you're familiar with hundreds and hundreds of plants, and you know the proper use of each one. And by studying in dark field, what we're doing is we're looking at what is the underlying cause. So, you read books like cancer is caused by parasites. Oh, no, it's caused by a fungus. It depends who you talk to. Are you talking to Hilda Clark? Are you talking to Dr. Simoncini? Who are you talking to? Where are you getting your information? The one thing that's never been proven that is caused by an error during the process of cellular division. That was the theory that I was first exposed to. There's no proof for it. There's not one thing. Nobody observed this ever happening. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. So you can't observe it, so you don't know if it's true or not.
Right. Yeah.
But when you look in dark field, you can see what's wrong. You can see whether they're parasites. You can see whether there's fungus. You can see whether there's free radical toxicity. All of this is very, very clear to you. And so then you say, okay, I'm going to fix the problem. And the body has a lot of talent for fixing itself if the obstacles are removed. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I don't know how many years I have left in this incarnation, but I want to help people to remove the obstacles to being well.
Yeah, well, that's a great thing to do. It is July 6, 2017. Here's an email for you. This is from, Juan. You want Juan. Would a person address a physical ailment or disease that is sourced from a past life and manifesting in this one differently from the same condition had been generated in this life? Did Shri Krishna Kashyap use special techniques to repair the bullet hole in Ingrid's spine? Yeah, we talked about that. Carried over. Yeah, we talked about that already earlier in the show. What Well, this I've had this email for a couple of hours, so they probably heard that part. But do you approach it, in your opinion, differently if the ailment is from past life or present life?
Well, that was no, because even the dichotomy that we see between past life and present, that this is an illusion that only can occur in the world of time. And if you're in a spirit state, there's no time.
No time.
Everything just simply is. No. There's no time in the spirit state.
Yeah, I understand.
So in your unconscious, where the disease is created, the disease is created as a reaction to an experience. So, mm-hmm. This is very interesting and very complicated. The feminine part of ourselves is passive, and the masculine part is, what could you say, initiatory. It launches things, and the feminine reacts. So it's not a boy girl. It's it's more of a yin yang. So every man, every woman has both yin and yang. And so if you have an experience that you don't like, you judge it. And so this doesn't feel good, and it doesn't feel good because it hurt, or it doesn't feel good because I died from it. And so the memory holds on to that. And so you are creating your physical body partly through memory. And so you have to remember and then find more skillful ways to handle the situation that are parallel. So what actually happened, and Juan's question is actually very intuitive and interesting, is that Dr. Kashyap had a dream before he started working on me, in which the Tibetan poet Saint Milarepa showed him 13 of my past lives. And it was fascinating. So he said that this is just sort of a talk, right? We don't know how to verify anything. But in the dream, he said that I had died as a result of somebody practicing black magic on me 13 incarnations ago. And that there was a residual from this that had become less and less with each subsequent incarnation. And he saw how much of it he could relieve in this lifetime. That was his dream, right? That's his story. And there was no way for anyone else to corroborate the story, but it was still his story. And interesting. And when I've done past life work, here's a real simple, easy to understand example. A woman had melanoma on the knee. And we did a past life regression, and she saw that in a previous lifetime, she had been a pilgrim who crawled on her knees to a cathedral in South America somewhere. And she really hurt her knees a lot by doing that. And so then she went back to even earlier one, and she'd been hit in exactly the same place by a poisoned arrow. So again, this whole idea that she has a vulnerability in the same part of the body, but the effect was getting less and less. The melanoma went away immediately when she saw the connection to the past life. She just drew a boundary. You know, that was then, this is now, it's over.
Yeah.
And I've seen quite a number of spontaneous remissions that occurred in the same way, that they just said, okay, I don't have any reason for holding on to this disease anymore, because it's a carryover from a time that's so different from now. I don't need this anymore.
Yeah.
Here's another breast cancer story. A woman had a lot of freedom and played in the forest and was enjoying her childhood tremendously. She grew up and fell in love, and the man was at sea a lot, and she used to watch constantly for the ship to return, and he never came back. And she just said, I don't like growing up. I don't want to have breasts. You know, I liked it before when I was young, and I didn't have any breasts, and I didn't have all this trauma. And I mean, it was an interesting story, not at all what you'd expect, maybe, you know, but each person's story is unique. And so that one fit her, and her breast cancer went away.
Yeah, yeah. I understand. 6th July, 2017. Good stuff. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. It seems to be with the work that we're all doing and learning, Ingrid, and I think you just hit on it, that when we talk about engrams or these trapped emotions, or I like to say untrapped emotions, I don't like to tell any emotion is trapped because I think it just makes it more trapped, but that's just me. So my untrapped emotions, that the key is, as you said, is to bring them into our awareness. And then as soul, we have the ability to then let them go because we see that they're not really us, I guess, is my experience.
Well, they're us from a personal perspective, right? We have many us's.
Right, but they're not part of us as soul. And as we see that, then it's easy for me, I guess, to just not go there anymore because we see the separation, I guess, even though there's no real separation.
Yeah, well, I was streaming last night trying to think, you know, how do I present information that's actually quite esoteric to someone? And, you know, is the pineal gland related to the third eye, related more to the crown chakra? A lot of different opinions on that. And what I saw was that the pituitary body and the pineal gland have a marriage. And this is, I mean, in Christianity, we'd say it's the marriage in heaven. Mm-hmm. This is like when someone becomes a nun or a priest, they're looking for the marriage in heaven. In Eastern philosophy, this is an internal mechanism, and they're actually secretions, so like, you know, hormones that are literally gurgling between the pituitary and the pineal gland. And they're yin and yang, that the pituitary body is very lunar, and the pineal gland is very solar. And so you have, again, day and night, light and darkness. You have spiritual impulse, you say higher consciousness, and you have emotional experience, which is part of your personal awareness, your personal consciousness. And, you know, if you want to be very erudite, you go to the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali and say that one is conditioned consciousness, the other is unconditioned consciousness. If I have a personal experience, let's say, of pain, that's mine. It doesn't have anything to do with the soul, but my soul has a relationship to Ingrid, who's incarnate at this time and having some good days and some bad days and some experiences she likes and some she doesn't like and so on and so forth. And everybody else is in the same boat, so to speak. So this is a pretty serious learning camp. As we master something, then we develop the skills to choose to respond rather than react. Then we start clearing all the miasms and we see things as they are. Mm-hmm. And that's the goal here, is to see things as they really are, not as we feel them to be. I was writing sort of a funny email to a friend. So when my sister was very young, she was running around the coffee table in the middle of the living room, and everybody told her to slow down. And then eventually the inevitable happened, and she banged into the table, cut her head, needed a lot of stitches, and she said, "The table hurt me." The table didn't do anything. You know? But there's a child says, "The table hurt me." A grown-up says, "I should have been watching where I was going," right?
Yeah.
The point is, though, that she got hurt. And so who is she going to blame? When we master our motion, like when we were running, we look to see that the path is clear. then we have less accidents. So this can happen, you know, an argument between people who love each other. How do you solve these problems? Can you listen? Can you let go? Can you create some empty space for discussion? Or are you just going to go get into a really intense blame game?
Francis writes in, I can filter chlorine from the water, but not the fluoride. I've been told by water filter suppliers that we absorb more chlorine and fluoride transdermally in the shower bath than we consume internally.
Yeah, it could be. What the studies show is that we're absorbing 4 times more fluoride today than when water was first fluoridated.
Really?
So it's coming from
everywhere.
Sources. Yeah, it's coming from everywhere, and it's a poison, but we could also call it a drug. It's in a lot of medications. It's in Prozac, for instance. And what it does is it dumbs us down. If people were very independent, we just celebrated American independence, right? We would think for ourselves, and we'd be very hard to manage. If you drug everyone, you create a whole civilization of sheeple. So who wants us to be sheeple rather than enlightened beings? That's your big question, because there is no medical reason for using fluoride.
Yeah. Ingrid Nyman is with us, 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Yeah, there's, we know a fellow, we don't really have financial connection to him, but friendsofwater.com. He's a really good guy, and if you have some questions about fluoride and chlorine and stuff like that, you might want to give him a call or look on his website and tell him we said hi. He's a good guy. His name is not coming to me right at the moment, but you'll know he answers the phone. But it's Friends of Water, and I know some people have got his water filters, and they thought he did a good job for them. Here's master herbalist Stephen Buhner giving some insights, guys, on why this pine pollen could boost your testosterone levels.
The pollen itself is extremely high in a number of male estrogens, the most potent of which is testosterone, and it's got a fairly high level of it. I mean, it's still in the micrograms, but that's really all the difference between us and women, is that we have this microgram more than they do, and then in the womb, that shifts us into the male developmental pattern. So when we start adding that stuff back in to our bloodstream, which you do if you take that sort of tincture and you hold it in your mouth for a while and then you swallow it without putting it in any water or anything, it goes right through the mucous membranes into the bloodstream, and so you start to get an increase in the body of actual testosterone, which then circulates to pretty much every cell in the body, and that then begins to increase vitality and muscle strength and everything else.
This is a great product. I've taken it for years. You can click an order, and use your Thrival link, different variations in the pine pollen, potency and price. Take your pick right here on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Listeners to the variety of programs on the One Radio Network have in many cases picked up on Wednesday's Real World of Money featuring Andy Goss. SDL Incorporated, Andy Goss's company, specializes in the purchasing and sale of American gold and silver coins. Many of the listeners have become familiar with Andy Goss as he has spoken about the central banks and their ability to create unlimited amounts of fiat or unbacked currency. The expansion of the money supply by these central banks around the world has actually created a very bullish market for gold and silver coins. Those who have listened to the shows have picked up on many of the points of accumulating gold and silver coins. Those who may be new, please feel free to call us for additional information anytime at 1-800-468-2646. That is SDL Incorporated, American Gold and Silver Coins, 1-800-468-2646.
All right. Pretty quiet so far today. Not much going on. 21,000 on the stock market. Gold is down about $3. Silver, 12 cents. Let's see what the dollar is down a little bit. Crude oil is up about 50 bucks a barrel. There you have it from usgoldcoins.com. If you're interested in these kinds of things, numismatic coins, real American money, my good friend Andrew Goss is the man there for this commercial, and he's been doing this for about 35 years or so, and he's a great guy, and it's a very small company that he trains all his people, and they've been there a long, long time, and their family, and it's not the kind of company that they're just going to sell you something just because they want to sell you something, work on a commission, and that kind of stuff. It's just nothing like that. It's like kind of going into a holistic coin dealer thing, and they're really interested, because Andy's that kind of guy. He's cool. They're really interested in who you are, what your goals are, you know, really getting to know you and understanding, so they could kind of figure out what kind of coin to sell you. You got to know a lot of stuff, because there's many, you know, like anything, God's in the details, you know, and if you really dig in, you can do really well with this and protect yourself from fiat currencies that we know are just going to continue, because that's about all they're going to do, is just keep printing more money around the world, not just in this country. So we think gold and silver are going to be good investments, and especially the numismatics, for they're all graded, and you know what you're getting, and as long as you can keep them for a few years, you're going to do probably pretty well, just because of the paradigm, you know, that we know the way money works in the world. It's pretty good chance, like about 99% chance, that the powers that be, the bankers, the globalists, you know, the boys we call them, are going to continue to do what they do, and that's create dollars and euro and yuan on a computer, and that's what they do. That's how they keep the whole thing going. It would just fall down and go boom if they wanted to get real. The odds of them all getting real after doing this for 250 years or more, probably not. So, and then if they're wrong, well, that'll be a great world anyway if we're all wrong, right? Previously with Stephen Huer, and why the uniqueness of One World Way delivers exceptional benefits.
A non-denatured, truly pure, truly raw whey protein will only help to raise glutathione. And when you raise glutathione, you have to remember, every cell of the body, your pancreas, your liver, brain, all are dependent upon 10% of the protein content and every cell being glutathione, and makes that cell detoxify itself of heavy metals, chemicals, and whatever drugs. And then that makes the cell healthy. And one of the reasons that you have chronic disease is because the cells of the different organs and bodies are producing too little glutathione. They're succumbing to the free radicals. They're succumbing to the toxins, damaging the function of that organ. And that's one of the reasons why One World Way is so profoundly therapeutically powerful, because every cell and every organ depends upon high levels of glutathione. And this is the number one food to fuel it over long periods of time, is glutathione production.
One World Way offers four very, very good tasting flavors: chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, and unsweetened, unflavored. Click and order One World Way right now on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source.
The source.
OneRadioNetwork.com. Talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
I'm talking to a very interesting lady, Ingrid Naiman, N-A-I-M-A-N. Her main website, you can go and check her out, and she'll lead you other places. ToxicTeeth.com. And she has 60 websites. I just can't get over that, Ingrid. I don't know about 60 websites. 60 websites, because she's got so much stuff. She studied with, as you can hear, all kinds of people around the world for a long time, 45 years or so. Quite an education in all this, and works with this dark field microscopy. Dark field, is that what they call it? Dark field microscopy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could you ask Ingrid, writes Linda, if there is an effect on the pineal gland by consuming, pine gum spirits, turpentine. Heard a testimony from someone about how it gave them a very profound spiritual experience. I thought maybe because the pineal gland might be the seat of the soul and it's shaped like a pine cone, maybe the pine tree has some purpose for humanity's biology, spirituality. Well, the pine tree is certainly pretty cool. We like pine pollen. I think sulfur originally comes from what? Pine trees, right? DMSO. What else in the pine tree? There's another one. What else is pine tree? Oh, turpentine.
No,
turpentine. Yeah, turpentine is pine tree.
There was a study done in Sweden right after World War II. A lot of the ski troops had been isolated, just cut off from their main sources of supplies, and they had lived on nothing but pine needles, pine cones.
Really? That's what they
and
ate?
And they
too?
Were... Yeah, that's all. They,
I didn't know you could eat a pine cone.
You have to live in Sweden. You only have pine and birch, right?
That's
it's
really,
not like being in the tropics. And my uncle was in the ski troops. And so what they discovered when they had all the troops in for physicals was that they were... underweight, but healthier than the people that had been eating all the normal food supplied to the troops.
Eating pine needles and pine cones.
Yeah.
I'll be done. Yeah. So what about, do you have some experience with the pure pine gum spirits, the turpentine at all?
It's in a lot of herbal remedies going back hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah.
I'm sure it has to be prepared very, very carefully. I certainly wouldn't want to drink it straight out of a bottle from the paint store.
No.
You know, so I think it improves assimilation, and it probably numbs some pain, too. It's in a lot of old herbal remedies.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that, yeah.
We sell one product on our website that's made of pine needles, but it's in capsule form.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
what's it used for, the pine needles?
An antioxidant.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so I'm much more conversant with Ayurvedic herbs than I am with some of these other. This is Canadian. It's a Canadian product.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean that one is better than the other. It just means that I know it better. I've studied it more.
I've heard that the pharmacopoeia in Ayurveda is just massive amounts of herbs compared to other places in the world. Is that true?
Well, the interesting thing is I'm going back now in preparation for Kalpa and reading the pre-Ayurvedic literature that was in Tamil. And one of the Siddhars, Bogarnatha, wrote a book on 4,400 herbs.
4,400 herbs.
Yeah, and so this was thousands of well, he lived for a long time, but he went to China where he became Lao Tzu.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And his teacher was Confucius. So these were Indians who decided to spread the Dharma, so to speak. I guess spread the teachings to China. And so they took, they created Chinese bodies. Actually, what Bogarnatha did is he took a dead body and revived it.
Hmm. Yeah.
And,
but I know that there, my experience, Ingrid, and I've talked about on the show, I've been working with a really cool Ayurvedic doc out of Sedona, and we get herbs from India, and they're nothing like, really pretty amazing herbal remedies. Lots of different ingredients in one. They're small, not a lot of big capsules to swallow, which I like. And they use gold and silver, and they're pretty creative. It's a fascinating.
Well, the whole alchemy is a method of processing so that things that were potentially toxic become not just harmless, but beneficial.
Yeah.
And the interesting, I don't know if it's true or not because there's a lot of controversy around it, but they say if you get a snake bite, a seriously venomous snake bite, and you expose yourself to a shock from, let's say, a car battery, it reverses the polarity of the toxins and it's harmless.
Really?
And that's essentially what alchemy is. It's mixing herbs that have known detoxifying properties so that they surrender something to the toxic substance. So let's say if you were talking nuclear radiation. I'm fascinated in this, and I'm creating an institute for studying it because it's so fascinating. That what is harmful about radiation is that it's unstable. So if you have, let's say, a benign form of uranium, you can hold uranium in your hand, right? Certain types. And so what you want to do is partner the electron so that it's stabilized. So the herb is going to surrender something to make it stable. And then it's harmless. It may not have any beneficial effect. It may, however, actually be healing at that point. But at minimum, it becomes harmless.
So that's something, what's going on with the Ayurvedic herbs, where you might see 30 or 40 ingredients.
It's not only 30 or 40 ingredients, but if you have gold is not a problem, I mean, because that's beneficial, but you'll find things like arsenic.
Yeah.
But it's been purified. And then the question is, does anyone believe it? Like if you put it through a chemical test and it comes back, well, it contains arsenic, but does it contain a dangerous form of arsenic or a stable form of arsenic? I don't think we have the sophistication to know that. I can see in dark field whether it's dangerous or not. I mean, give something to someone, you see within 15 or 20 minutes whether it's harmful or not.
And think about the time and the consciousness that had to come together, Ingrid, to put some of these herbal preparations together with, you know, 25, 30, or 40, and the exact amount and the synergy between them. And phew, man, but it goes back thousands of years. So they had a long time to work on this stuff.
Yeah. And I suspect that, you know, we're going through a phase now on the planet where we're discovering there were not just ancient civilizations, but they may go back millions of years. So finding something that's 12,000 years old is, that's interesting because, you know, our history doesn't take us back that far.
Sure.
But if you believe the work of someone like Michael Cremo, I mean, then we're talking millions of years, not thousands. And so they're extremely advanced, and they must have left some treasures for us. I mean, that some of the knowledge must have been preserved somewhere. You think of now what governments are doing with their seed bank in Norway, or, you know, their bunkers underground. I mean, everyone has an idea about how to preserve things for the future in case this, that, or the other thing happens, right? So I think we're going to find that all this knowledge was there. If for me, as a medical astrologer, this system of stars is so complex. How could primitive people have ever imagined it? You know, they couldn't have. It has to have been given to us already as a whole system from somewhere. Somebody told us how to look at the sky and how to group the stars and what it all means. Yeah. I mean, we couldn't have invented it out of a mere human mind.
Here's an email for you. Carrie writes in, while in the hospital for a serious fall with broken bones last week, a CAT scan, they called it tomography, I'm in Ecuador, was done. When I saw the print, I saw a spot in the center of my brain and thought that meant my pineal was calcified. Is that a correct assumption, or is the pineal gland calcification only confirmed by an MRI?
No, it probably is a reasonable assumption. And in Ecuador, just for the record, the salt is fluoridated. And so there's a whole program now to fluoridate salt. And I saw a map, and I couldn't use it, obviously, in a radio presentation, but the whole of Latin America is starting to fluoridate salt. In Europe, it's also, you know, the water isn't fluoridated, but the salt is.
Oh, good, yeah. Just what we need, fluoridated salt, yeah. So he could, maybe Carrie could kind of think about this could possibly be, would a CAT scan anger show up?
The I think so. Yeah. I would think so, yeah. You know, because it's going to be a white speck there.
Mm-hmm.
And
Here is Henry. He's in South Carolina. He says, I have a classic heartburn that I just can't seem to get my arms around. I've tried acid. I've tried no acid. And it just doesn't want to go away. Does Ingrid have some ideas? Well, there's probably about 400 million people around the planet or more with the classic kind of a heartburn thing. You know, the purple pill, right, and all of these acid blockers, they're like huge, billions of dollars. And I suspect they're doing more harm than good. What are your theories on this epidemic in our culture?
Well, I think the epidemic is partly that we're not eating properly. Mm-hmm. And when I go to Ecuador, I feel that the food is generally better than ours by a significant margin. I can eat much less and feel nourished. And I carry one of my own formulas that I sort of developed, a travel kit for Montezuma's Revenge and other things that go wrong when you're traveling. But something called Intestigard. And I found if I'm exposed to GMO food, like what do you eat at an airport and when you have a long layover? So, you know, I get an uncomfortable feeling or sometimes a really bad feeling. And it'll go away with just a tiny bit of this product. But the main thing is to be careful. And before I moved here, I took a trip. I drove from Santa Fe all the way to North Carolina and then back to the West Coast. And as I did it, I was remembering, well, I had a client who lived here and a client who lived there. St. Louis was one that was particularly poignant. And I went to a Chinese restaurant because I'm a vegetarian and I thought I can usually find Chinese food. The rice tasted terrible. And I thought, how can rice taste this bad? And then, taste the water. And the water tastes bad. So, yeah, of course the rice tastes bad. And the tea tastes bad, too. Tea leaves, both green and black tea, absorb a lot of fluoride. And that's not saying don't drink tea anymore, but make sure it's organic.
Okay, heartburn.
Yeah, but it's due to what you eat,
you
right?
You think it's just a diet? You think it's just...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not the heart, it's the stomach.
No, of course, yeah. So you think just processed foods or GMO foods and these kind of things are what's causing most of this in people?
Yeah, indigestible food too. Because I mean, you go to a restaurant and things are microwave. You can't digest microwave food.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And so you have to know how the food is prepared, and then just avoid things that are overprocessed or, you know, not wholesome. I'm not saying everybody should be a fruitarian or something like that. I mean, that's too extreme. Man invented fire or discovered it for a reason. But we do have to be really picky now. And one of the interesting things with GMO foods and is nature so strong. This is an anecdotal thing. I think if you follow the GMO story, you know that pigweed is everywhere now. Well, it's amaranth. Cortez ordered his troops to destroy all the amaranth because it was making the Aztecs too strong.
Hmm.
And so they wanted to dominate these indigenous cultures. And so they had to subdue them by destroying their food supply. And so now we're seeing all this amaranth taking over the GMO foods, and it seems like poetic revenge.
Oh, because it, yeah.
It's so nourishing.
Yeah,
it's so nourishing.
It's amaranth? Amaranth?
Yeah.
Okay.
I roast it.
Here's a couple of questions for you. This is from Ivan. Which herbs or herbal formulas would you recommend for removing age spots, moles, and skin tags? Are there herbs that can be taken internally, applied externally, for wrinkles and overall beautiful skin?
Most of the time, these spots are what we usually call them liver spots or aging spots.
Right.
The skin is being used as an auxiliary eliminatory organ. So you start by cleaning your eliminatory organ so that the skin is not used for getting rid of things. And one of the methods for treating the pineal gland is to make a paste out of turmeric. And what I did it, just I was just curious, and I made some in just coconut oil, just mixed it with coconut oil. Sorry. And the spots went away.
Oh, you mean you had some little liver spots and you did the coconut oil and turmeric and they went away? Just put them on?
Not immediately, but little by little.
I'll be done.
Turmeric. And I'm suspecting that some of the ones, that, especially on the face, it's dental toxins that are coming out through the skin there. So you see some people that have just a lot of spots, mostly on the face, not on the whole body. And so I've sometimes, I have an intraoral camera, and I've examined the teeth that are near the spot where, sort of like, let's say there's one near the jaw. You know, what's happening with the tooth that's closest to that spot? Does it have an amalgam filling? Does it have a composite filling? Does it have a crown? Is it leaking? What's the story with that tooth?
So you think these things, mercury and whatever one we, root canal stuff, it's trying to come out of the skin around the face, around where the teeth are.
Well, it's everything. It's not just the root canal, because I mean that's infectious material, but it's the xenoestrogens that are in the composites, and I have thousands of subscribers to my e-list, and a lot of them are telling me once they started going natural with this, that, or the other thing, which could have been one of my formulas or something they found on their own, all of their dental restorations detached. And the same thing happened to me. Like, I was just horrified. Like, one composite after another just fell out.
They just fell out, yeah.
Just fell off. And it exposed the dentin. And I thought, okay, well, this is serious. I went to my dentist. And I don't know. I might as well have talked to the wall. And he just said, I've said that once in a while when I don't know what to say, but I'm just using things like horsetail now to try to remineralize the teeth.
Uh-huh.
And, slow. It's slow because these were not little tiny fillings. They were whole crowns and things that fell off. Because you're talking like $10,000 of dental work just fell off. It's...
Yeah, the body knows when it wants to dump, when it's dumped.
Sure,
dump, yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So this fellow, Henry, wrote back, said, okay, I understand about I eat really good food. I eat organic food. I don't eat any dairy. I don't eat any meat, but I still have the heartburn. So where would he look now?
Well, okay, he might not be of a constitutional type that produces enough stomach acids. You need acid. That mean all, as Dr. Ladd would say, Dr. Vasant Ladd, all food is cooked sooner or later. So if it isn't cooked on the stove, it's cooked by your stomach acids.
Yeah.
And it has to be transformed by fire. Fire is the element of transformation. So there's certain people that have a constitutional, basic constitutional type that doesn't produce enough of these acids. So that's one problem. And then you can jazz up the food a bit. Most people that I know, if they put a lot of spices into the food, it becomes digestible and they don't have any heartburn.
What kind of spices for Henry that he could try?
Well, you can go to an Indian restaurant or Thai restaurant. Just be sure that you don't get microwave food. Well, Indian restaurants, usually if there's a buffet.
What kind of spices like that Henry could try to spice up his food?
Yeah, so that the food has to absorb the spices in cooking, which is why I'm saying go to an Indian restaurant or Thai restaurant because that's how they cook. And just try it once or twice and see if the food is more digestible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's different recipes on the internet for different, like khichdi and stuff like that. And you can play around with some Indian spices. And so what do you suppose we've heard so many people say that, that a lot of people just don't make enough stomach acid, but that... You know, that doesn't make sense to me, sort of, Ingrid, logically, of why would we design the body, God and soul design this body so you would make less stomach acid as you matured? I mean, unless you're ready to die. I don't get that.
We build our bodies with the emotions that, if we go back a little bit to what I was saying earlier, that we carried over from past lives. So we have a predisposition to favor certain designs or elements over others. Like some people are just, you know, more airy. They're more talkative. They're more nervous. They're quicker. They're, you know, and they like being that way. They don't want to be different. You know, that may, you know, okay, I know it's a good idea to be more grounded, but I don't like feeling grounded. I like being light and feathery. I'm a fire type, and when I was a kid, everybody always told me to slow down. And I thought, well, I don't want to slow down.
I'm having fun going fast,
Yeah, and I want to talk fast. I want to run fast. I want to do things quickly. And, I need time to process. Well, if you're intuitive, you don't need to process. So if you're not intuitive, you need to process because things don't come together as quickly. You have to think it through. But I don't have an engineering mind. I have an intuitive mind. So everybody is different, and they like their differences. And so we have to respect it. This person does it this way. This one does it that way. But then you get the body that expresses who we are. And so if you don't like the indigestion, then you have to eat something that's more digestible.
Find something that keep experimenting. So Henry can keep experimenting and he'll come across something, right? Some things to eat.
I've never heard of somebody that couldn't digest a really delicious curry soup. You know, I make coconut curry soup when I'm tired and, you know, it's quick. And sometimes I work till 4 a.m. and so I want something that doesn't take forever to cook. And that keeps me going and tastes wonderful and is easy to digest.
So sometimes you'll stay up and do research all night long?
See, I get interruptions in the daytime, and then I have a technical team that comes on board. They're mostly in Asia, and so they're around late afternoon. They're making contacts, and then everybody goes to sleep, and I can get some work done.
any particular thing before we go that you're especially passionate about now that you're researching and kind of excited about what you're learning.
I think there's nothing more tragic than not knowing who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to tell a story of a doctor who came to me with cancer when he was about 65. And he said, I know how to treat the cancer, but he said, I want to know my purpose in life. I was very young. I broke into tears because I wished he'd asked the question when he was 20, not 65. And so to go all the way through life without knowing who you are is a tragedy. And so I think that my purpose in developing all these products now for decalcification of the pineal gland is to help people reconnect with who they really are. I see the potential for a world revolution, a positive one. To revolt means to revolve in harmony with the cosmos.
Oh, I
so
like
it's
that.
It's to be in alignment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
to be like cantankerous and take over the castle.
No.
It's to be in alignment with what truth, maybe.
Yeah, it's not to overthrow anyone. It's to bring your own mandate into expression.
Oh, that's a nice way to look at revolt. Yeah.
Yeah. So we each, every person I've ever regressed has had something like papers, like here's your mission in life. You know, you're going from the Pleiades or from this star or that star, you're going to Earth. Here's what you're supposed to do when you get there. And then they forgot. And the whole world would transform. It would become perfect in a very short time if hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people realized who they are.
Would remember why we came.
Yeah. It changes you forever to know who you really are. Because otherwise we're lost. You know, we think, well, I should be finding happiness here, or I should be finding it there. But do you?
Yeah.
You're only really happy doing what you most love. And we were created out of love. I mean, the universe is love.
Yeah.
And so how did we lose that passion that holds us together? I don't know. It's we need to find it, and then we can express it. And I think that recovering the ability to use the pineal gland is a really important step in the right direction.
Yeah. So once again, the website for the pineal gland products, again, give me that one again. We got the toxic teeth one. Okay.
Toxic
teeth. So that's easy. And then you go to the shop, which I'm going right now with my mouse. There it goes. And then you can find the different. I see the Are You Rinse. That's different, right? A-Y-U-R.
That's
rinse.
A periodontal.
Oh, it's a periodontal
rinse.
Thing. Mm-hmm. And then we got the Bringraj extract and all that. And then the bilberry bakumin. So you got all kinds of things here. Yeah, these black seed oils are pretty amazing, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Ooh,
man. You got a lot of cool little products here. And again, the one is Are You Calc, right? To decalcify your pineal gland. Wayne, mm-hmm. you're great fun to talk to. I had a good time. Thanks for getting up early.
Yeah.
But, you know, it sounds like you get up early anyway, so I probably don't go to sleep sometimes.
I don't have an alarm clock, so I had to set my inner timer. But, Patrick, it's been fun, and thanks a lot for having
me.
Yeah,
really, really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So the main place we'll send folks is toxicteeth.com. And please pass on this podcast. Ingrid, my dear, thank you very much.
Thank you, and I love your marimba.
Marimba. Oh, you mean this little marimba music? Yeah. It's kind of fun, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, my dear, we'll see you real soon. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay, thanks,
bye-bye.
Patrick.
Wow, there you go. Yeah, she looks like she's got some cool little things on here. Going through some of the products here on toxicteeth.com. You might want to get your... This calcification thing of a pineal would probably be something pretty easy to take. And even if you... I mean, what could hurt, right? Okay, kids, we'll see you tomorrow for Open Phone Friday. Hope you enjoyed the show, and thank you for your ongoing support. We're going to be ordering sulfur again, I guess, in the morning if you want to get some. We appreciate your support of our products, Daniels and The Way, Rebounders, Saunas, and our store, and Gary Hanna with Coral Silvers, Shen Blossom, the Ginseng, and Shazandra. We got a lot of great stuff here. So if you're going to spend your money, why not spend it with us? And so you know the source, so you know that you're getting the real, well, the best that we know. So I love you guys. Thanks for everything. We will see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock, okay?
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.